The attorney general was riveted. He asked me question after question, seeking more details. 2.5 hours later, when our meeting was finished, Mark's aloof, professional demeanor had shifted to one of sheer outrage. He stood up and addressed everyone at the table. "This situation is really serious, and it has the potential of becoming a mass suicide. We have got to pull more help in on this situation immediately. We need to collaborate with the state of Arizona and pull in the feds." Dan told Shurtleff that Merrill had hired one of the highest paid attorneys in the state to fight me. Dan and I knew that if Merrill could win his case against me, no woman would ever again try. Shurtleff said that my case was going to be a high profile one, and he would find an attorney smart enough to protect my children. A few days later, he put me in touch with a former judge, Lisa Jones, who had done custody cases for years and knew family law inside and out. She was now working for a major law firm and agreed to take my case pro bono. Mark Shurtleff's involvement was a turning point for my custody case. He began collaborating with Arizona's attorney general. I met with investigators from that office, too. I met with Lisa Jones a few weeks later. She's a small woman with a big presence. With her short red hair, she can come across as a firecracker. But the truth is that she's much more of a heat-seeking missile that aims right at her target and rarely misses. While she's tough, she was easy to work with and became my rock. Merrill's attorney, Rod Parker, knew he'd be playing hardball now that Lisa Jones was involved. It began to feel as if the tide had turned in my favor. Now that Merrill had visitation rights with my children, it was easier than ever for him to fill them with more lies. He began telling them that Dan Fisher was an immoral man who wanted to have sex with me until he was sick of it and then would throw me into the streets. This was terrifying to them because they believed if that happened, I'd return to their father. By this point, my children liked being with me, but were still afraid of living in the outside world. They didn't think I had the ability to take care of them. I reached out to Lisa, and we agreed that my kids had to feel like our new life was for real and that it could be maintained. The key to this would be finding a place of our own to live. The quickest way to accomplish this was to go through the shelter system. The battered women's shelter in West Jordan was my jumping off point. The social workers there knew all the options for assistance and would help me find permanent subsidized housing. I enrolled my younger children and Betty in summer school to help them start catching up. What sabotaged my hoped-for achievement of normalcy were Merrill's visits. He was permitted to take the children every other weekend. He'd collect them for the 5-hour drive to Colorado City on Friday night. It seemed to take my children 2 weeks to unwind from the visits to Colorado City. They'd be tense and argumentative when they came home. We were at the shelter for 5 weeks. The breakthrough came when a woman who knew what we were up against, Rhoda Thompson, raised some money to help me get a roof over our heads. 2 trailers that combined to give us 5 bedrooms and 4 bathrooms. We had a beautiful front yard and space out back where the children could roam and play. When Merrill heard about our new living arrangements, he was furious. I think he hoped that I'd be forced from the shelter into the streets and then back to him. He couldn't have been more wrong.